This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, today we're going to be having a guest that I've actually had recorded a few months ago, in fact, last May here in 2019, and this is one of those conversations that I've been wanting to post, but there have been so many other people that I've gotten together with, and it's kind of like some others I've kind of got in queue right now. It's just that I'm trying to decide which ones to get out next. Well, anyhow, I know you're going to be enjoying this one. It is somebody that I've been wanting to talk to for a while. He lives in Las Vegas, and he is a nightclub entrepreneur, actually, as well as a cruise ship magician, and has been on television on Masters of Illusion, and as well as their tour, and worked in casinos in Vegas and everything else. Greg Gleason is someone that, if you have not seen him, it's probably because he's had his head down and been working. If you have seen him, it's because you've probably been out on a cruise ship and seen him perform someplace, because he's been out there for a very long time, and now he is back on shore, and he's working on other projects to kind of go back to his roots. That is where he was working as a nightclub entrepreneur, as I said, in which he had owned or managed these different nightclubs. And he's got, of course, now something in mind with a magic theme. So in the future, there might be a couple of things that he's working on that could come to fruition in a city somewhere near you. So he's always looking for some kind of opportunity. So anyhow, I had an opportunity, I said, to sit down and chat with him a while back, and I'm glad I can finally have some time here to present this for you. And so please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Greg Gleason, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And today I thought it'd be interesting to go in a little bit different direction and kind of go overseas and around the world. And what better way to travel than by ship and by cruise ship? That means that there's always going to be a lot of entertainment, a lot of food, a lot of fun, a lot of sun. And I'm going to be talking with a guy who's not only a cruise ship magician, but also has been on several television shows, including the Masters of Illusion. And beyond that, he is a collector of magic, particularly Doug Henning type of memorabilia and some other things, and just very knowledgeable in many different phases of magic, including how to create clubs. I mean, he had worked managing some different clubs, not necessarily magic clubs, but just a lot of stuff that we can get into. He's got a lot of interesting things and directions. We'll see how this conversation goes. Please welcome my friend, Greg Gleason. Hey there, Greg.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
And I'm glad that...
We're here in Dallas, my hometown.
Your hometown, that's right.
I haven't lived here for 30 years, but...
You were in Vegas, and then how recent did you move back here then?
Oh, I still live in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a house there and some rental properties.
I was going to say, you're a rental or a real estate mogul there.
Yeah, well, kind of.
And so you're just here in Dallas then for a few days, kind of checking out some things and about potential.
Yeah, I always like to come back here. I got a lot of friends here. And you were talking about clubs. I opened my first nightclub here in Dallas. I was doing magic when I was a kid and a junior. You know, the magician, Bill Bixby the magician.
Yeah,
and TV series, and then Mark Wilson. I saw the Mark Wilson Magic Circus. I didn't see that. Never saw the Magic Land of Alakazam.
That was back in the black and white days.
Yeah, and maybe it was on. Maybe I lived in Montana then.
From Montana?
I'm from all over, but okay. I went to elementary school in Montana.
Okay,
and actually, I hadn't been back there for 40 years, and I went back there last year, and it was great seeing. You know, where I grew up as a kid and went to elementary school.
Do you have any family, brothers, cousins?
I have a little bit of family. Most of my relatives are all from Minnesota, and that's where my parents are from. But my parents, we moved around a lot. So, you know, it's actually, looking back, I think it's the greatest thing ever because I have sets of friends from all over the country. I have friends from Montana, from Ohio, from Houston, from Dallas, from Las Vegas, from Kansas City. Topeka, Kansas, all over the place. So
I think that's a great thing for children to be picked up and moved, you know, that you're not probably enjoying it as a child necessarily because you just made friends or you got on the sports team or on the cheerleading squad if you're whatever. And so, it's hard to get in move. But then later, looking back at that, to think about the varied experiences and places you've lived and people you met, but more importantly, how that you learn to adapt to different situations and cultures.
It makes you flexible, and I think it's been a very important part of me being successful in my career and being able to go anywhere and pretty much do anything. So,
You've never really felt like that you've had any obstacles or things that you can't overcome.
Never.
Because you were able to adapt.
Exactly.
You know, pretty well. Yeah, you know, not everybody really has that opportunity, and there are people who live and die in their same house where they were brought up, you know. And, I'm kind of like with you. I kind of feel like that home is where I hang my hat.
Right.
You know, although that I consider myself a Texan. I was born in Illinois, you know, and I've kind of lived around in Oklahoma and Nebraska and every place, you know, then too. But I've lived in Texas longer than any place. But
Texas is a good place.
Yeah, it is. I love Texas. A lot of magicians here, a lot of magic, a lot of things going on. I really enjoy this. did you move to Vegas because that's where the shows were or other magicians? Or
I had... I was doing a show in Japan. Let's go back a little bit. Can we go back a little bit? I'll tell you.
Yeah, let's get in Doctor Who's TARDIS and go back a little bit.
Okay. When I owned my club here in Dallas, it was called The Basement, and it was a rock and roll place, and all the rock and roll.
What year-ish would that have been?
I opened that in 87.
Okay.
And it just exploded. We were doing 1,200 people a night, and it was crazy. And...
You managed it, owned it, or
I owned it.
Okay,
I owned it, and well, because I owned it, I had to manage it. Yeah. I didn't, you know, all that cash is coming through the door and through the bars and everything. So if you're not there,
good point.
You might not be going into your bank account.
Yeah.
So I was really hands on, and I opened a few more after that. But this one in Dallas just took off, and all the rock stars hung out there after their concerts, and you know, a lot of bands started at my club and moved on, and it's really amazing to see what happened with everybody, how they moved on.
Didn't Pantera come to your
Pantera
club?
Pantera start? Yeah. No, they were my Monday night band, and then they moved to my Thursday night, and then Friday and Saturday, that was a really, really a good experience. And when I owned that club, I called up Magic Island in Houston and said, hey, I'm going to open a magic club in Dallas. And I was talking to David Ahmed, who owned it back then with Dr. Atari. And David Ahmed goes, oh, you are? And I said, yep. And he goes, I'm going to come up and meet you. So he flew up and met me. And I showed him my club. And he said, why don't you come down and run Magic Island? And then we'll see if we get along. And maybe we'll do something together. And I said, okay. Sounds like a plan. So I went down there and ran Magic Island for the management side for... I'm going to say like 6 months. But when I was there, I met Dan Summers and Kerry Pollack and Vito Lupo and Chip Romero and all these magicians. And I go, you know, I've been doing magic since I was a kid. And in this management, club management and ownership, it takes up all my time. I'd rather just have fun and do magic. And so I talked to some magicians and I said, I think I want to get back into that part. And some of them said, well, I'll help you out. And then I ended up in Japan doing a 6-month contract. Dan Summers had an offer, and he had something else going on, so we couldn't do it. And I said, I'll do it. And then when I came back after that, I saw an ad in Magic Magazine. It wasn't even an ad. It was just a little article. Stan's Magic Magazine what year was that? 93. And his Magic Magazine's only been out like since November 91 or something like that. So it was a little over a year old, and it just had like a little paragraph that said, Las Vegas showroom being special show, magic showroom being built, and it's going to be called The Wizard Secret, and Gene Patrick Productions is building the whole show. And I'm living in Houston at the time, and I go, Gene Patrick Productions? I'm going to look that up. There's no computers back then.
Right, exactly.
So I don't even know how I found out. But I go, oh, that's in Dallas. I go, I'm from Dallas. So I get on the phone and I call up here right away. Hey, who's doing that magic show in Las Vegas? And they said, we don't know. We're just building it. And I go, well, I want to do it. And I go, I'll send you my videotape. And they say, we're not taking any tapes right now. We're just building the show.
Yeah, way too early.
And it's like, doesn't open until November, December. Contact us like in June or July.
Which hotel? Which casino was it in?
MGM.
MGM, okay.
And they were just building the MGM.
Now, was this about the time that the one in Caesar's Empire was?
No, that was 3 or 4 years later. And that was part of that at the beginning, too.
Okay, we'll get to that. Sorry.
So anyway, I had built all these nightclubs, and I came back from Japan. And so I was just brand new to the Illusion game, and I didn't have all these jobs lined up, all these different contracts lined up. So I had some downtime, and the nightclub company I started with said, "Hey, Greg, we want to open a club in Dallas. Why don't you go up there and build it for us?" I go, "Okay, I'll go up and build it for you." Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be like a couple blocks from where Gene Patrick Productions and John Morian were building the show.
That was at Abracadabra, right?
What's that?
Abracadabra, was that the show?
Wizard Secrets.
Okay, there was something I thought that John Mooring was involved with. It was called Abracadabra.
You know, I think that was on the, where was that? That was on the East Coast. I remember that. That was before me.
Okay.
I remember seeing pictures of that. It was an amusement park he did that in. But I do remember him talking about that. And actually, the magician that did that for him came and saw us at MGM.
So this guy completed. He built the thing. Then
they
and I was
building the club right next to where John was building the show. So I'd go over there every day. Mm-hmm. Say, "Hey, you gonna hire me? 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 Come on, John." I gave him the same videotape every day. I mean, he had a stack of Greg Gleason magic videos. The same video.
A stack of them,
like 30 of them. I go, "You watch my video now. Here's another one. Watch my video now. Here's another one." And then I think he just got so tired of me bugging him after the...
Persistent paid off.
I know. And they didn't have the the casting contract until like a month before it opened. Mm-hmm. And MGM had so much going on. They go, "You cast it. You built it. You cast it." So John goes, as soon as they got the contract, they said, "Okay, you want to go to Las Vegas?" And I go, "Yes, I want to go to Las Vegas." So that's how I ended up there.
Well, so then you say that you've been there since
93 to 96. You mentioned the Magical Empire at Magic Wizard Secrets. We had that 4-year contract, and it was winding down, and Magical Empire was being built at that time. Mm-hmm. And they contacted me and wanted me to be the general manager, not in the performing part, but the general manager running the whole operation. And it was a big operation, $50 million operation. And I said, "I'll do it." And then when I went over to do it, it was back to, 15, 16-hour days on salary. And I just wasn't happy doing that. I did that enough. And I was like, "No, I just want to be a performer now."
Yeah.
And I said, "This isn't for me. I don't want to be babysitting bartenders and waitresses and waiters and dishwashers and everybody else."
That time at Wizards, did you do any magic as well, or were you just the manager?
Where at?
At the place in Vegas that had opened. You were saying that...
The Wizard Secrets?
The Wizard Secrets.
Oh, I was the magician the whole time.
That's what I meant. Okay, so okay, got it. Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. I did 12 shows a day, 6 days a week. So I was doing 72 shows a week. Mm-hmm. And this was 93, 94, 95, 96. Las Vegas has changed a lot since then. We had lines, and we were sold out every single show. And
how did you get paid back then? I mean, I know things have changed, and they four-wall things now, but it used to be that the casinos would actually pay you. And so were you like on a salary? You got X number of dollars per show or per night? Or how
did
you
get paid? We were on salary.
And if you can share, what kind of price or what did you make back then?
What was that? That was about, it was like, I don't know, $3,500 a week or something like that. Health insurance, everything. It was a good deal.
Yeah.
It was, I ate there every day. And
so you really didn't have much expenses except your lodging, basically, as far as what you were paying for.
And we just rented an apartment.
Yeah.
Actually a townhouse. And it was kind of funny because we needed a couple assistants. So one of the managers that was helping me open that club right before I moved out there, I said, "Hey, you have acting ability, don't you?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "I need an assistant. Come on out here." So that was kind of fun, just bringing some of my friends out from Dallas to Las Vegas. But, it was good pay. for back then.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked, because I was asking Jeff Hobson about this some time ago. It used to be that it was like $1,200 or something, $1,000, you know, to, I think he had standalone. Some of the people had filled in.
Yep.
It's like, okay, I'm getting $1,000 tonight, just, you know, for the fill-in or something. But yeah, as it continued to fall off and more people kind of came out, it's kind of like you almost had to pay them. I think it was like the Greek islands. Like, if you want to say you worked in Vegas, you know, that you can pay us $50 a night to come. It's like a stripper or something, you know.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, it got to be crazy.
Well, when I four-walled the Venetian, that was in 2002, just to rent the theater was $24,000 a week, or basically $100,000 a month to rent the theater.
And now, then, is that the union, the lights, and all the workers or included?
That included, luckily, that wasn't union, or it would have been a lot more. Like, I just finished a run at Bally's, and that was through Masters of Illusion, so I wasn't producing that. So they had to pay for the room. They had to pay the union. At Venetian, when I was there in 2002, we weren't union, so...
I understand that some casinos are more favorable to magicians as far as how the union worked with them money-wise.
I have no idea.
Okay, yeah.
Some
people said, you know, that their show was in whatever casino, name a casino, and they said, however, that the price that they're going to have to pay is going to be the same as others, but probably won't work out because they're going to make it tough on these guys, you know, and so they don't last.
By the Magic Act?
The Magic Act, yeah. It's like they only last 3 to 6 months or something. It's like it's a great act, but it was just the
wrong
venue.
Well, it's crazy. You know, like, I know the Tropicana, it was $38,000 a week for the union. And then
$38,000 a week for the union.
Yeah.
Ouch.
And I think they were giving the room to them because no one's going to pay on top of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just right now when I moved out there in 93, there was, I'm going to say, 12 casinos, or at least 12 casinos that had a showroom, and there was 12 shows. And now every casino had rents out the rooms, and they can rent. They'll rent out as many places as they can put a theater. Some of the casinos will have 10, you know, 7, 8, 10 shows going through. So, you know,
right.
There was 13 shows when I moved to Vegas, and now there's 150. And then there's the nightclubs, and then there's the helicopter rides, and the.
Oh, there's a lot to compete. It's not just the shows anymore. It's a good point.
It's completely different.
Wax museums and whatever else, and Star Trek and Experience, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, the dining and everything, it's changed a lot. You know,
exactly.
I've talked to so many guys, like Fielding and others, saying, you know, it was almost better back whenever the mob rented, because, you know, you had 99-cent cocktail, shrimp cocktails, you know, or $5 prime rib or something.
I know.
You
know? It was fun. I remember those days. Yep, it's not like that anymore.
But it changed a lot, as I understand it, that Belinda's brother, what's his name, that is a producer out there, Melinda, not Belinda, that he had started four-walling. And then the casinos kind of said, oh, that's not a bad idea. You know, that way we don't have to pay, that they'll pay us. And a little at a time, that it kind of started going a different direction.
Yeah, I don't know if he actually started,
you know what I'm thinking? I can't think of his name. What's his name?
Yeah, David.
Yeah, David Saxe. That's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was like one of the beginners doing that. Actually, Melinda's mom might have been doing. But you know, when she was at, people gave her a hard time, and she put on
good
her
show.
Shows were
yeah,
good.
I saw.
She was at the Sahara. I saw her at the Sahara. Big illusion show. Had Anthony Gatto, top juggler in the world, in it. She had the some Chinese acrobats. She had the King Charles troupe, which, you know, they were in Siegfried and Roy show at the Frontier. I don't know if you saw those guys. They played basketball on unicycles.
And that rings a bell.
It was like, I'm going to say, like 20 of them, 25 of them out. It was hysterical. Maybe not 20. Mm-hmm. Maybe it just seemed like that because it filled the whole stage. And they're, you know, they have five on each team, and some of them are on short, you know, cycles, and some are on tall, and they got the refs out there. And and it was, man, even when it was in Siegfried and Roy show, boy, there was so much energy in that act. It was crazy. And
yeah.
Melinda had, you know, Siegfried and Roy moved over to Mirage, so Melinda picked him up. And, you know, shows like that, they don't even do shows like that anymore. It's
that kind of variety. Yeah.
No, it's one-man shows, and one-man shows have a hard time. You know, you got Mike Hammer, who does a great show right there. And he got the Mentalist at Bally's. He does a great show. His show's called Phenomenon. But they're just like one-man shows because the casinos aren't helping you. They don't advertise you. They, you know, you pay for the room. And if you're paying for a whole cast, it's just when you're competing against all of those other shows. Yeah. And now the Cirque shows, you know, the Cirque shows have been ruling Las Vegas for the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I think their days are numbered. I think there's been rumors that they'll close them all in the next year or two. But they've had a 25-year run.
What's Melinda been doing? Have you seen her around? Or
you know, I haven't seen her for a while.
Steve Daly told me, I think it seems like she got married, had children, and I think she's kind of not necessarily into magic or doing anything necessarily, but now and again will do something.
I think so. She did. She got married. She had kids. She moved to Arizona. Totally got out of it.
Yeah.
And then she came back to Vegas, and she was in her brother's show, V, doing some illusions for a while.
Yeah.
And she's a sweetheart. I haven't talked to her for a while, so I don't know what she's doing.
Yeah, yeah, she's a nice lady. I know that Vegas had completely changed and from what that it is then right now, but I remember for way back when, it seems like that everybody had made a migration from L.A. First of all, everybody went out to Los Angeles thinking, hey, I'm going to get the movies, you know, back when Harry Anderson was successful as his TV show. It's like, hey, we're going to do that too. And then it's kind of like, well, when it wasn't working out, then all of a sudden when Siegfried and Roy had broken the barrier and they started doing magic in Vegas, they said, okay, now that's a place. And then everybody went to Vegas, it seemed like, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, back when Siegfried and Roy broke it, then you had Carlton and the
That's Furcos, right, Carlton and Company,
and,
yeah.
And then they
the
brought
Furcos,
in Paul
there's
Fiddler
a group.
And Joseph and Shimada and every show, every variety show, every casino. You know, there's only 10 of them back then, 10 shows, but every one of them needed a magician.
To talk about the Furcos for a minute, I saw them out in Atlantic City, and it was, for those who haven't seen them or heard of them, they were like Siegfried and Roy doppelgangers, basically. You know, they were a circus act originally, and jugglers. And then I think they saw the success that Siegfried and Roy had, you know, and then started doing very similar kind of a thing in dress and demeanor and the types of shows and everything they did. And when I saw them in Vegas, then they asked me to dinner, and the three of us were sitting there, and long before I did podcasts, I wish I would have recorded the conversation, but they were talking about, and I kind of hit them up about that, and they pretty much vehemently were saying, no, you know, we're different. And we
no, they're not.
Yeah.
If you can afford Siegfried and Roy, you got the Furcos.
Yeah, yeah.
If you wanted the cats and the two guys, a blonde and a brunette, wearing animal print costumes.
Flashy costumes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, well, where are they today? Speaking of Melinda, where are the Furcos? What are they doing? Are they doing cruise ships? Are they overseas? Or
no, you know, it's those illusion acts. There's just not that many places to work anymore.
I think Vegas would be the only place really that you can, or perhaps in Branson.
Branson, Macau, maybe.
Well, that shut down, I understand.
Which one?
The Macau, the thing that Franz Ferrari was doing.
Yeah, it had a good run. And
did you ever go work that?
I never did. Mm-hmm. I just never had time.
I know, because that was like a six-month, long-term contract, I think, you know, that deal.
It ran 3 years or something. I think it ran a pretty good run.
Yeah, yeah. But that's true. There, and that was what I was going to get around then to you, because I know you do a lot of big illusions, and you've used cats, haven't you?
Well, a little bit, and then I was bit by one.
Really?
Yeah.
What the heck happened? Tell me that story.
I was working on, you know, the deal when you have meat in your hand and you hold your hand up and it jumps up and puts its paws on your shoulder and it takes the meat out of your mouth. And I'm 6'4", and the trainer was like 5'10", so the cat just wasn't used to jumping as high, as tall as I am. So it kept hitting me in the chest and pushing me back, and it was supposed to have its paws on my shoulder, so it was getting frustrated, so it just took its mouth and put it around my entire thigh, and its fangs were on the other side, and it was just squeezing. It wasn't biting. It was just like, give me my food. It's like, I'm tired of this. I'm squeezing your leg. And the trainer came over and hit him on the nose with a big pipe or a big wooden sticker. I don't remember what it was, but hit him right on the nose, and he opened his mouth. And I go, that's it. I'm never, ever, ever, because my leg could have been gone that fast. And it was, you know, I go, that really hurt. And we looked at it and it was fine, but the next day it was all black and blue because it was a pressure, you know, just a pressure bite.
No puncture marks.
No puncture, because his fangs were on the other side of my thigh.
Gotcha.
And I go, I'm never using cats again. But, I, you know, as far as illusions go, I have 52 of them in my warehouse right now. So
But where do you work them? Where do you perform those?
Well, on ships, I did a 20-year run on ships.
Mm-hmm. And same, different lines?
Yeah, I worked on Royal Caribbean, Celebrity, NCL, Holland, Radisson, Regent, Silver Seas, Oceania, Crystal. Did I say Crystal?
Yes. Silver Seas.
And I'm probably missing some. But those are... Well, that's
through an agent. Through an agent.
Yeah.
I've always said that's the best way of going. That's what I was told whenever I first started doing that. They were saying if you start to contact the ships directly themselves and you don't get it, then you talk to an agent. They're going to say, well, who have you already talked to? And if they've turned you down, they're not going to send you back out. So it's best to have an agent.
It's very, very tricky to get into to get into the cruise industry, you need to have an agent. And I had my show at the MGM, so I did all those shows, 9,000 shows. I go, and I was on The Tonight Show, and I have all these credits. And I mm-hmm. go, I'm just going to send my promo tapes to all the agents. And that's you don't do that because then they all submit you, and it just causes a mess.
Yeah.
So it's too chaotic. Yeah. So the first one who sends it is the one who gets to represent you. And I had one agent for 2 or 3 years and I just had to fire him. I got a different agent. But
this wasn't booking the kinds of ships you wanted, or not the kind of salary?
They were more, I'm going to say, they were more like just phone answering. They answered the phone.
They weren't pushing you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was like, I'm not really like those other acts. Just don't answer the phone and say, throw Greg in there. I mean, I had a Big Illusion show, and at that time, there weren't very many Illusion acts on the ship, and I got to the point where I had the biggest Illusion show by far on any of the ships. I was doing, a flying routine, Johnny Gons,
Wow.
It wasn't, near as elaborate as David Copperfield's by any means, but still,
yeah,
it was amazing on a cruise ship, and I opened the show with it, mm-hmm. and I was doing my version that I invented of the helicopter production, and those were neat. That was like in the middle of a show. And then my Table of Death, which is completely different than everybody else's, was the closer.
What did you open with?
That levitation.
That levitation. It was, yeah. Okay.
It was more like a pole levitation. And I was sitting on a table and I floated up and we took away one pole and like, ta-da. And then they took away the other pole and I'm just sitting in midair. And then boom, I'm all the way up to the lights and then coming down. They're passing the hoops over me mm-hmm. and then back up and they put the table back out and I come down and land. And walk forward and say, now that's how you start a magic show. And it was incredible. And just all my in-one pieces were very, very strong. And mm-hmm. But because I was on the ship for so long, I got to rotate so many illusions. And I just get bored with doing the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
I was just like, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do this. So, and I never sold anything. I just kept it.
Did you leave the illusions on the ships or did you leave them on land, and so that way when the ship would come through that you would haul them off? I mean, so that way you have different things in different places, so you had different shows, or how did you go about that?
Well, it's different at the beginning because they'd hire you for, like, let's say my first contract was 3 months. And they say, okay, you're on for 3 months. So you move all your stuff on the ship for 3 months, and then it's over, then you move it all off.
Plus your assistants, which how many people did you have at the time with you? Three more?
My ex-wife was with me in the show. Mm-hmm. And then I would hire between 2 and 4 girls, depending on what I was doing in the show at that time.
Now, would you bring the girls on, or would you hire them
from the
ship?
I'd hire the ones there.
Okay.
You're going to have a really hard time if you're going to bring in extra assistants, because there's no cabin space. So,
good point.
They have production shows on the ships, and there's a lot of
singers and dancers. They know what they're doing. Sure.
Yep.
You can train them pretty quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say if you're an illusionist, you only hire professional dancers because they're going to pick it up fast and they know how to stand on stage and walk on stage. And
good advice.
And you have to, it's just, if you want your show to look good and you're an illusionist, hire professional dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And
so the illusions you were saying, as far as leaving them on the ship, or you brought them on and then for
those
3 months?
Those contracts always had it. They're all in cases. You load them off and then you go home. And then next contract, you ship them all there. And I did that, I'm going to say, for like 4 or 5 years. And then I wanted to be a resident magician on a ship, mm-hmm. which means you just leave your stuff there. And NCL, I was working on NCL all the time, but they wouldn't make me a resident. And I was like, look, I'm tired of moving all this stuff around.
Plus, it's cheaper for them, I would think, too.
Oh, yeah. Which, well, it is. Mm-hmm. But
just to leave you there.
The departments don't always communicate with each other. So logistics doesn't deal with entertainment. You know, like NCL, I don't think the entertainment had anything to do with logistics. They just said ship it there. So they were never like responsible, but things have changed now. And it's like, they're looking at, well, why is logistics spending all this money? Well, it's the entertainment department. So, but back in 90s and early 2000s, it wasn't like that, but now I think it is. So, but I just, it's a lot of work moving all that stuff.
I would think so.
And, I mean, right now, like when I do my China tours, it's, you know, a 40-foot container completely full of stuff. And when I'm on the road with Masters of Illusion, I'll fill up almost the whole 53-foot semi.
Just with your stuff?
Yeah.
And then you got all the other guys, too, who are on
the tour. But, you know, the comedians, their stuff doesn't take up a lot of room.
Well, I guess that's true.
And the other illusionist, their stuff's not as big as mine. So, but I'll take a big chunk of it. But it's a lot of work, you know. Well, back to the cruise ships. In 2005, Celebrity said, we'll give you your own ship. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And then NCL got mad because, like, wait a second, he's our favorite magician. Why is he going to Celebrity? And my agent said, because they gave him his own ship for a year, and they're paying him this much money. Well, we can't pay him that much money. And it's just,
well, there you go.
That's why. But I really wanted to work on NCL because I like their ships better. And after that year was up, my agent said, look, Greg will come back to your ship, but he wants the Dawn out of New York City. So, because, you know, New York's just fun. I wouldn't want to live there. But I'll tell you, when you're there one day a week, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing that ship for 7 years. I had a contract. I was on 3 months and home for a month and on 3 months and home for a month. But the reason I accumulated so many illusions was, every year I was changing the show.
Okay.
And I never changed it all at once. It was just like, you know, after 9 months, one illusion would come in, one would go out and a new one would come in. But they, after being there 7 years, they rotated quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I would think, though, that you would have, I guess when you keep those, you go back and say, well, you know, I haven't done this in a while. And so you can maybe put a different twist, a different routine or music or something with that, because there's something that's now popular that, you know, that changes the dynamic of that completely.
Exactly. Yeah, you can give it a whole new look. Mm-hmm. My zigzags completely, I gave it a whole new look. It looks modern. What I did was, you know, I got rid of the line drawing that Robert Harbin put on his. And I had the girl, I did the interior of the box. I did a gradient, so it went from red to blue. Very bright inside the box. And then I took off the doors, and I had the girl stand inside the box in her costume that she was going to wear and do the pose that the outside of the door.
Mimic the picture on the door,
So, and then we mounted that picture on the door. So when we're doing it, it really looks like,
there's no door.
It looks like there's no door. It's like glass, and she's just standing there.
Yeah.
Then you put the blades in and move her over, and it looks...
that's a great idea.
Amazing. So, you know, just that little change to the zigzag. I was touring with that Masters of Illusion. I put it in for one tour, and it was getting huge reactions. Mm-hmm. And it was like people haven't seen the zigzag since the 70s.
Yeah. It was popular for a while, then kind of, fell out in favor.
Everyone was doing it, and it was like, oh, not that trick again, but... you know, it was going over so well. We're touring with Masters of Illusion. I did 10 of their tours. And so we toured all over the U.S. and overseas. And it was a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work, too. They're all one-nighters, so you're up every morning at 8 in the morning.
How many people are touring with Masters of Illusion?
We always had like 4 or 5 magicians. Okay. It was, when I first started, it was me and Rick Thomas, and Rick had a lot of stuff, and I had a lot of stuff. So that was a huge show. And then the comedian there was probably Farrell Dillon, who does a straitjacket escape, didn't take up any room. So, but usually there's, I'm going to say, 4 to 5 magicians on a tour. Sometimes okay. four, sometimes five.
Going back just a little bit on that, yep. that whole tour began, I guess, with the television show's success, and
right.
then it decided, hey, we can go on tour. So Gabe Blackstone
exactly.
being the producer. So tell a little bit about how you got hooked up with the show to begin with on TV.
Well, it goes back a lot farther than the TV show, okay. the recent TV show. I did their TV show in 1999. They did like one or two seasons.
Hmm.
I don't know if it was one or two, but
Was it called Masters of Illusion?
Okay. And they taped it in 99. Maybe just 1 year they did that. And then it just disappeared. It was a different network, and mm-hmm. I don't know what happened. But when I had my show at the Venetian in 2002, I invited David Martin, who, when I was on the cruise ships, I worked with a comedian named Gary Muledeer, which I loved, because when I was a kid, I was watching a TV show called Make Me Laugh, and Gary Muledeer was one of my favorite comedians on there. So mm-hmm. he was on the ship with me, and we got to be friends. And he said, you know, you should talk to my manager. I think he would have some work for you. And he used to manage Harry Blackstone Jr. in Pendragons, but he's not managing any magic act right now.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. So I called him up, and I wonder what year that was, probably 2000 or 2000. Anyway, when I had my show at the Venetian, I called him up. His name is David Martin. And I said, hey, David, why don't you come see my show? I'm at the Venetian. He goes, okay. And then as soon as he came to my show, he goes, wow, I'll be your manager. I'll represent you.
Cool.
And he did for a while. And then, but when I do cruises all the time, I don't need a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I had done all that on my own. So he wasn't really part of that. But they started taping the TV show again. They said, we want you to be on the, they started the tour and the TV show, and they said, we want you to be on the first season. I go, I can't, I'm too busy. Well, can you do the tour? I go, no, I can't, I'm too busy. But I made time for the second taping. I said, I'm going to block off that time so I can be on the second season.
Season, yeah.
So I've been on season 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, plus the 99. So what is that? 7 years, six mm-hmm. years of those. And when I do the Masters of Illusion, you know, because I have such a huge inventory of things,
right?
They need a lot of material. They burn through so much.
They do
material.
Pretty quick within a half hour time. Actually, what do yep. they have? Like 20 minutes actually of real time.
23, I think.
Okay.
22 or 23, mm-hmm. and yeah, the segments. I have a hard time sometimes breaking my illusions in, or they edit them to the point where it's like, I don't like that, but they have to fit.
It comes down to like 90 seconds of Greg yeah. Gleason.
I know. And it should be like, that's a 7 minute routine. And
yeah.
now it's 90
yeah.
seconds. But that's what TV is like these
sure.
days.
Mm-hmm.
So
either take it or you don't.
I know. Unless you're Darren Brown, you know?
Yeah.
His TV series are very quick too. But mm-hmm. When they show his, I'm a big Darren Brown fan.
They go over well in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've seen him on Netflix or something in the US, and I don't know, maybe it's too slow for American audiences or something. I'm a fan too. I think he's tremendous. I wish we saw more of him, and
yep.
the US audience knew who he was know who he is. Yeah. And so with the TV show, with Masters of Illusion, have you done other? You said you were on The Tonight Show. Was that with Jimmy Fallon, or how long ago was that?
That was Jay Leno, actually.
Jay Leno goes back that far. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was, I just recently was talking with Paul Gertner, and he was talking about how that he got on with Johnny Carson, or that he kept sending and calling. He said, I'm going to make it a thing. You know, I'm going to call every week. Did you see my tape? Like you were
right.
talking to that
yep.
other guy. So were you persistent? Did somebody see you? How'd that come about?
You know, I always wanted to be on The Tonight Show. I really wanted to be on when Johnny was on. I was either too young, or I was in the nightclub business for all those years. I was in the nightclub business from 84 till 92. So, and that was, you know, the ages that a lot of my friends were getting on. Pat Hazel was getting on The Tonight
yep.
Show. Lance was getting on The Tonight Show. But I didn't go the magic route then. I was doing the nightclub route. And then...
doing magic or just kind of managing?
Just managing only.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I was hired to do magic at a nightclub in Kansas City when I was 23 called Confetti. And before we even opened, they said, do you want to be the entertainment director? Because not only are we going to have magicians, we're going to have dancers, and we're going to have jugglers, and we're going to have all these people. I go, yeah, I'll be the entertainment director. So mm-hmm. I was instantly before we even opened, I'm in a management position, but I'm still doing my magic. I'm still doing upside down straight jackets over the dance floor and in the zigzags and sub trunks, you know, right on the dance floor, completely surrounded. And so, but
wild times.
It was fun. Those were fun days.
Yeah.
And then they said, you know what, why don't you just move into management? You'd be an entertainment manager and a regular manager. And so they were just like giving me twice as much work. I said, okay, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, why don't you be the general manager? I said, okay, I'll do that. And I'm only like, how old? It's a $3 million club in 1984. And by 1985, I'm the general manager of it. It's like,
And you were like, I'm
24 years old.
24, okay.
And it's like, I'm running this $3 million nightclub when I'm 24. And then I went, and then other company, it was such a popular nightclub that other companies would call Confetti, and they just wanted the managers. They wanted to steal the managers of these
because they were successful.
Really successful, yeah. So there was a ripoff Confetti chain out of Ohio called Streamers, and they offered me all this money. I go, I'm only 25. Okay, I'll do that. And then Confetti called me up and said, hey, we want you to come run the Dallas. I went, okay, I'll do that. So that's what, and then after running these clubs and seeing how much money they made, I said, I'd make a lot more money if I owned them. Mm-hmm. So that's when I decided, it's like, okay, I'm 26. I'm opening my own nightclub.
And yeah.
People, you're crazy. It's like, how much money do you have? I go, I don't have any money. It's like, well, how are you going to open a nightclub?
Yeah, exactly.
I said, I can get investors for that. And sure enough, I said, I'll triple your money. If you give me this much money, I'll triple it in 1 year. And I tripled everyone's money in 1 year. And now it's just like, even 30 years later, it's like, well, Greg, when are you going to do something? You know,
I'm ready to invest. Got the same guys.
We're all 30 years older, but now they have a lot more money now. And it's like, come on, Greg, we're going to, you know, so I'm always looking for projects. So, that's why I'm in Dallas. I'm just looking at a project list. All my investors are here. And it's kind of like, just do something, Greg. We want you to do something.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. Maybe I'll do something here. I don't know.
Hope something works out. Aside from that, you've got to have a lot of other balls in the air and things you're working on. A lot of things I know most people can't talk about because you don't want to jinx it or else the contract hasn't been inked or whatever.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I got like two really, really big projects in the works right now. I can't talk about it now.
Cause, understand.
Exactly. You know, if I don't want to say, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that.
And then
it not go through. And it's like, what happened to that? It's like,
that's not uncommon. There are so many people that have so many different balls in the air all the time. And particularly if you're trying to pitch projects to television stations or networks or whatever, that they're pretty fickle. You know, that they may say yes or no. And then, I mean, I have so many friends who have had something that has been green-lighted and then find out that the president, gets replaced. And so now they got a new guy saying, well, the reason he's being replaced, because obviously they didn't like whatever the other guy was doing. And so we're going to do something completely different. And so those projects are green-lighted are now out. You know,
I know.
So it's like, ugh. I thought I had a deal, you know.
Yes.
So that's not uncommon. So it's kind of like, don't talk about it until actually it happens.
Right. This one project I have is moving really fast. So hopefully I can announce it in the next week or couple, maybe within the next month for sure.
Okay. Yeah, here we are as we're talking, by the way, and people are listening to this. I'm not sure when this is going to be posted, but we're here end of May. So it's not even the summertime right now. So not even June yet. So hopefully by the time this comes out that you'll be able to be talking more about that, or we can maybe put that on the end, say whatever that is. Well, listen, I also mentioned about Doug Henning, and I know that you and Chip Romero, of course, he's a cruise ship guy, and I did a podcast with him some time ago, and he's the really Doug Henning guy, but you have also got some things in your collection. I just want to talk about some of that.
I got a few things. Me and Chip, we go back to the Magic Island days, and Chip's one of the guys, and I got to be friends with him when I was managing that. And I said, I think I'd rather be, you know, doing what you're doing, and I'll go work cruise ships, and I just want to do magic. He wasn't a collector when I met him.
He wasn't making the money, you know, at the time. And once you start working cruises, he didn't have any place. That's the thing about working cruises, just like you were saying when you're working at the casino, that they're paying you, but also you get your food, all you're paying for is lodging. And whenever that you're at sea, you really don't have many, if any, expenses. You're just kind of banking money. And I think that's kind of what Chip was doing. It's like, okay, well, now I've got this cash.
Yep.
I don't have any wife or kids, I can do this.
You can save a lot of money. And you can save a lot of money when you're doing it full time. When you're doing it part time, that's what happens to a lot of cruise ship entertainers. They go out and they work for a month and then they're home for 1 or 2 months and they spend it all.
Sure.
And then I go, I'm not going to make any. I got to be out there for 9 months and then I'll save all
Start
of it.
Start to bank it.
Mm-hmm. And then that's why I bought real estate and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, because I didn't, when I moved to Las Vegas, I didn't have hardly any money. It mm-hmm. was, I had a couple illusions that I built from Paul Osborne plans. And,
yeah.
And actually, I built those when I was in high school.
We were talking about that last night, about how some people think, okay, well, you're so successful. It's like, well, you don't know the dues I paid.
I know. It was, yeah. It was, you know, I used to, my dad would take me to Dallas Magic Land like once a month. Mm. And, you know, if I had $5, I was lucky to buy something once a month. And, you know, I couldn't afford a zombie. I could afford that miracle ball because it was $5, that styrofoam ball yeah. On the yellow cup, you know. I actually did those tricks when you're a kid. You know, I did birthday parties sure. and made a little money. But while we're on that, it was kind of funny because like the Dallas Magic Land, they'd have like these Milson Worth props on the top of top shelf. And there's like $80. It's like, I never could afford one of those.
It's like top shelf liquor. That's top shelf magic.
I know. But it's funny because now I buy them because I just wanted them when I was a kid. Yeah. Now I can buy that. So yeah. A couple of those things, the balloon box and the flame clock and stuff, it's mm-hmm. it's kind of funny. And I'll end up using them with a project I'm working on now just to talk about the concept of illusions and
yeah.
based on those ideas. But
how or why did you start getting into collecting?
No one ever, me and Chip talk about that. You never get into collecting. You just...
Intentionally.
Yeah, you just end up with stuff. And it's like all of a sudden you have a collection and... And, you know, I don't have really a big Doug Henning collection. Chip has all that stuff. And even a lot of the stuff, some of the stuff Chip has in his collection, I ended up having and sold it to him because he was really the collector now. And, but there's a couple pieces that, you know, just growing up at that time, I was a huge Doug Henning fan. And when the Statue of the Pharaohs came up, Kirby Van Burch had it, bought it from Doug. Mm-hmm. And I said, Kirby, if you ever want to sell that, let me know. And it was fun because I got to do it in the Masters of Illusion too.
Right.
But like a lot of the Doug Henning, I do a lot of the Doug Henning illusions. You know, the motorcycle Vanish started. He was the first one to do that. And I did that.
The one you do, is that the one that was owned by him?
No.
Okay. So it's just a version of his.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly. Like Copperfield did it too and just had a different version of it. Right. I mean, it's the same. It's the Bangle Net,
right.
Mm-hmm. I was just always a Doug Henning fan. And now, you know, I've done the water levitation for years, the fire dome, the Gazinta box. Back, you know, it's funny watching Doug Henning when you're a teenager, you know, they didn't have VCRs. And and it's funny, I talked to Jeff McBride, one of my really close friends, and we talk about putting our little Bell and Howell or our Sony cassette recorder microphone right up to the TV, and just all we had was an audio tape.
I've done that.
Yep. And I learned like Doug's linking ring routine. I learned I bought the pamphlet, the Vernon Symphony of Rings.
Symphony of Rings, right.
And I listened to Doug do it, and that's how I learned how to do that trick. So, you know, here I'm in high school doing Symphony of the Rings. And even it's funny, like the Ricky Jay thing, when he did that exclusive courtier, queen assembly basically out of expert at the card table, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm a little 13-year-old doing it. Didn't work for me very well, but I learned it from that. Yeah. And I learned scripting from that, so I mean it was worth doing. And it's just, when you're a kid, that's what you do.
But are they illusions that kind of started you into the collecting, or was it Doug Henning? Or do you, I know like in Chip's case, although he specializes in Henning, he's got, of course, a lot of the Pendragon stuff, and he's got Vernon's rings and Cardini's billiard balls, etc.
Yeah, you know what? My collection's nothing like Chip's. It's just I have a few Doug Henning pieces, and I have some Blackstone Senior stuff. Mm-hmm. Chip's been like spends a lot of time on the auctions,
right?
And gets all that stuff from the auctions. And he's, you know, he's more of a collector. He just collects it to have, and like everything,
he displays it too. He's got a nice display at his home.
It looks great. Oh yeah, I love going to his house.
Yeah, and he's going to be building another shed or something out back, he said. Yeah,
he needs to. He's out of room.
Yeah, exactly.
I keep saying, Chip, just move out to Las Vegas. You can buy a big house out here.
He was thinking about, you know, he was out there looking some places a while back.
Yeah.
Back when Liz was alive. Yeah.
He might. The But I don't...
Now, the two of you guys are going to be doing something in Las Vegas, right? I'm sorry, in the IBM convention in Scottsdale. Are you going to be bringing some things? I know he's got
I'm not
big...
bringing anything, but I might just go there to hang out. I don't know what my schedule is at that point. I hope I can make it.
For those who are listening, by the way, again, that Chip's going to be doing a big Doug Henning kind of a thing where he's bringing... He said, I'm going to be spending... probably $5,000 or $10,000 of my own money to bring things and to show things. I mean, whatever they're paying me is not going to be enough to cover.
It won't be.
It'll be phenomenal.
It'll be worth going to. And, and he did a great job. You know, he did a scaled down version of it at the TOM. Was it TOM?
Yeah, it was. It was scaled down. Golly, I remember that big scrim he had in the backdrop.
The blue sky and the clouds.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, and he had the disembodied princes that with Doug's face in there. And all. It was in pretty good. And then Gene Anderson, of course, then supplemented his talk in talking about his Torn Restored newspaper and his relationship with Doug and Doug staying in his house. And that was just a great, great.
It was the highlight. It was that. And Harry Anderson's lecture were the highlight of that.
Yeah, convention. That's true. Harry's was good then as well.
Other things. I collect, you know, I have top hats, you know, collapsible top hats. I probably have 60 of them displayed all over.
Anybody's
my house.
In particular or just top hats in general? I mean, they were owned by Alexander or somebody or kind of a thing?
No, none in particular. It's just when I was on ships, I'd be bored and I'd be. I'd get on eBay, and if they were under $100 for a collapsible top hat antique, I'd say, I'm buying that. And I just have them shipped to my house, and I get home, and I'd have like four or five more, and I did that for years.
You got them
years.
Displayed in a case or something?
They're hanging up over all my posters, and they're my office, and I have this mantle that has five blooming rose bushes on it, because, you know, I bought one blooming rose bush for my show on the ship, and then it was in my Venetian show, and then... someone said, you know, I just built a beautiful, beautiful blooming rose bush. You should put it in your show. I went and looked at it. I said, wow, that's amazing. I said, I'll buy that. So I bought that.
It's
and
cool
then a little while later, Harry Blackstone Sr.'s became available. So I said, I'm going to buy that. And then I ended up with Blackstone Sr.'s rose bush, which was really cool. And I don't know who made that. It was like the 30s. Works completely different than my motorized mechanical remote control ones.
Yeah.
and then I was in China and I saw the rose bushes they were making over there. I said, I'll take two of those. So now my mantle has five rose bushes probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 top hats mixed in between them. And it just looks really, really, really cool. But, and then I was doing a card sword. I always liked a card sword and I was doing a card sword routine. And then, bought another card sword, and before you know it, I have, you know, 10 card swords, different kinds. And so I never ended up wanting to go, I'm going to collect any of this. You
start acquiring things. It's like, I got one, then I got two. Well, I need to get a third one. And before long, then
exactly.
you start into, I think that's the same thing. I remember Bob Lund with the Magic Museum there in Marshall, Michigan, talking about the difference between accumulating and collecting. You know, you kind of accumulate, just, you know, to collect, I think you have to display it. Then
right.
Also, you know, properly.
And I display everything, I can.
Uh-huh. One real last question I forgot to ask when we were talking back about doing illusions and cruise ships and things like that. Obviously, whenever that they are setting the stage between acts and everything, what type of things do you do as you're in between bits?
Like the in one pieces?
You're in one. In other words, are you doing like linking rings, Torn Restored newspaper?
You know, I try to not
rope
do,
trick or
I try not to do any of that.
Do you do any much comedy or what? I mean, in between bits, one in one.
It's pretty much a lot of comedy, but it's all situation comedy because of the what routines I'm doing. And I've worked really hard to come up with a lot of original things that here's what you don't want. You don't want, because cruisers, they don't cruise once. A lot of cruisers cruise once a year or two or three times a year. It's become so affordable now it's actually cheaper to do that than to go somewhere. I mean, like a hotel room can cost you, you know, $250 a night, depending on what city you're in, or more. If you're staying in L.A., you know, it's $250 to $400 or $500. New York's
that's
the same.
Crazy. Yeah.
Just for the hotel room. You can get on a ship sometimes for, you know, $400 a cruise for 7 days.
Including all your meals.
All your meals and in your room. Lodging. And all the shows.
Shows, yeah.
It's crazy. So I try, there's basically, they see a magician on almost every ship, and I don't want to do anything that, you know, they say, oh yeah, we saw the rings. Oh yeah, we saw. But I try not to, it's, you know, if you want to be successful on the ships, you don't want to do what everyone's doing. And like Masters of Illusion, it's like the TV show, no rope tricks. It's just like one rope trick is just like any other rope trick in a layperson's eyes. What happened? They cut it in half and went back together. Or they, it was one length and now it's two lengths. Or it's just a rope trick. You can't, you know, and there's some good rope tricks out there. And I did put one into the show for a while, but I just didn't want to be doing the same stuff as everybody else because mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're in that category. So,
right.
But it's hard to, you know, it takes a long time to develop stuff and work out new things. But, you know, I've been in this business, I'm going to say, you know, 35, 40 years, and I'm constantly learning. Jeff McBride's one of my best friends, and all we do is work on new material all the time. And when I was on the ships, I had books out there, and I read, you know, I bought every magic book that I could get my hands on, and just constantly learning and taking one idea and, you know, turning it into a different routine that it's not going to look like every other magic act.
Sure. That's what would separate you from the others. And people want to come back, as you say, because you've got several cruisers that are going to come back and say, I like that magician on the sea. He's got something new the next time, too. You know,
yep.
Same thing, I think, like at restaurants, that there are people who are your usual patrons and they want to see something. Yeah, they have some favorites they want to see, but also, you know, they're bringing back friends maybe to see this as well. But also you want to do something a little bit different. So that's why it's going to be special for them also.
Exactly.
Well, as we start to kind of wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is your philosophy of life? What is your magic word, or what do you live by? What's important to you?
Question. How about, how does this saying go? It's one of my favorite sayings too. The past is history, the future is a mystery. Live every day like a gift. That's why they call it the present.
Very well said. You got it. That's the phrase.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you being my guest here.
Okay. Thank you.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Greg Gleason, and this is Scotty out.
Well, thank you, Greg, very much for being my guest. It was a fascinating romp around the world with you as we kind of jumped on the cruise ship with you and got to hear some of the stories about your past and where you've been and traveled a little bit there, as well as some tips we've got on. Hopefully there might be some other entrepreneurs or some impresarios out there who want to open up their own clubs. And as far as that goes, by the way, for the listeners, that he was saying at the time that we had recorded this, that he was just a few weeks away from hopefully being able to announce something. Well, I have checked back with him just this week, and apparently that, as you could imagine, there are a lot of moving parts in all of this. And as a result, that some of the things that he was working on have shifted, and so the sands have move from one place to the other, and so he's still working on some things. He's got a couple of balls still up in the air, but nothing that he can talk about since they're not quite firm yet. But that's just kind of the way that business goes. Sometimes you think things are going to be landing, and then they don't, but that's just the way it is. But I want to thank you again, Greg, for being my guest, and I hope that the rest of your listeners enjoyed this as much as I did. It was great getting to talk with a friend, and perhaps that if you didn't know Greg very well, well, now you've made a new friend then, too. So if you have not yet subscribed to the Pod Letter, be sure to go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you will see where that should be a little pop-up that will come up and say, subscribe to our Pod Letter. It's just a little weekly thing that lets you know who it is that's going to be in each episode that's released each week, as well as a preview of who's going to be on the following week, and a suggestion from the archives of someone perhaps you may have missed, or you might want to hear a second time. So it's very brief and comes into your email inbox weekly on Thursday at the same time that these podcasts are released. So we do have several others, as I mentioned in the first part of this podcast, that are in the can, so to speak, and so they are just waiting time to actually be broadcast. So I know that you're going to be loving those things that are coming up. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and remember to live every day in the present. because that your gift is the present. This is Scotty out.